Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Never stray. Subway posters all over New York and elsewhere use those words to herald the path. Hulu's original drama concerning matters of family and faith, co-starring Aaron Paul of Breaking Bad fame, Michelle Monaghan, and Hugh Dancy. Creator Jeffrey Goldberg joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Our second half hour features a candidate for hardest working co-star on television. You can see him now on the new Netflix comedy, The Characters, and will April 1st when Banshee opens its fourth and final season on Cinemax. But that's not all, folks, and we'll learn why from Chance Kelly. Also ahead, an Apple TV 2.0 update, our classic trivia question of the week, and appreciating as versatile a television director as it gets. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you today by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. You can listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. 47 degrees at the top of the hour, and we welcome you to another week of the program All About Television. Delighted you're with us. We got some wonderful guests coming away in the next hour and change, and of course, we invite you to be part of the program. It's very simple. Just give us a phone call and make your voice heard. The number you use is 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. And if you're not into the phone, we got chat room for you to use on our Blog Talk Radio homepage. It's SimonApple04 by name. There's 883 already in the room. So join that person and be part of the program. And while the show is on the air, you can connect with others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Over the last couple of hours, Apple had its spring press event at its headquarters in Cupertino, California, and there wasn't much said about Apple TV 2.0, but there were some tidbits, as showcased by Apple TV President and CEO Tim Cook. First, he said that there are now over 5,000 apps available on Apple TV. Second, there'll be a software update available later today. And third, one of the features of the update will be a way to take some of those apps and arrange them by folder. And there's one more thing. A new app on Apple TV allows you to watch NCAA men's or women's basketball games in a March Madness style, watching two games simultaneously at the same time, plus scores and highlights of other games either taking place earlier or later in the day, as well as games in progress. So that's what Apple TV had to say at the Apple press event in Cupertino, California. Tim Cook, by the way, said that this would be the last event that would be held at the current headquarters next year. They're going to be moving to a new, bigger complex in the Silicon Valley area. And that is news notes for today. On March 30th, Hulu will premiere its latest original series. It's called The Path. It is overseen by the award-winning executive producer of Friday Night Lights and Parenthood, Jason Katzen, and it remarks the talent, and it has a new talent on the writing scene involved. And we're about to bring you that talent right now. Joining us live from Los Angeles, in an internet radio exclusive, the creator of The Path on Hulu, Jessica Goldberg. Jessica, great to have you with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
So what is it like to be a week away from really showcasing yourself in the biggest way on TV yet?
It's at once incredibly emotional and the most thrilling thing in the world, and terrifying, I'll add that.
Why do you say all of that?
You know, it's really emotional because this is like a project that I sort of went in a room and, you know, most things like in Hollywood are sort of developed and worked on with a lot of notes. Like, this is a script I really, like, on my break from parenthood, went in a room and wrote. I was sort of going through a hard time in my life. So it's very emotional that it happened, that it's in the world, that it got this incredible cast, that Jason wanted to work on it with me. So that part of the show is, it's sort of mystifying. And then it's thrilling. It's so thrilling when you've been working for many years in Hollywood to sort of have your own thing in the world. And then, of course, it's terrifying because it's like being pregnant and now your baby's going to go to school and people are going to teach it bad words and put their stuff on it. So, you know, those things are all wrapped up together.
At what point during your run writing for Parenthood did you say, I want to do my own thing and The Path is going to be my own thing?
You know, I didn't. I always wrote my own stuff. Whenever I've worked on television, I always would, try to write a movie or try to write a play for myself at the same time. But when this hiatus came, I was struggling with some. I had lost my father. I had gotten divorced about a year before, and I was struggling with these big life existential crises, and I sort of wanted to look at what that is when you sort of have a crisis of faith.
And when you boil it all down, your program, The Path, is all about two things. It's faith and it's family. And
yes.
I said in the intro, it's matters of both. And I still had a chance to, I was doing BK Live earlier today on Beaver TV here in Brooklyn, that saw the trailer. And it really is as intense a show as it can get.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. I mean, it's about, Aaron and Michelle have two children. She was born into this faith, the Myers movement, and Aaron, who plays Eddie, came into it later. He had gone through a loss in his life and then found this place and met this woman, and it has been his whole life, but he's recently having a crisis of faith and really, the show sort of grapples with, can you stay in a faith and in a marriage and not believe?
And where did where does the crisis come from? Does it come from a particular belief that the family is split apart on? Does it come from a change in one of the characters' lives? How does the dilemma manifest itself?
Well, he goes on a retreat in which he to Peru, in which he with a shaman takes ayahuasca, and he has a vision. And the vision, and for me, the vision is more about stuff that was probably brewing deep inside of him for a long time. But in the vision reveals something to him that causes, that makes him doubt what he's been told.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to give too much away.
I totally understand that. And by the way, I want to welcome Stevie into our chat room as well as guest 900. So if you have a question or comment for Jessica, give us the ring or use that chat room. It's SimonApple04 by name, and the phone number you use is 646-652-2906. Once you decided you were going to do this series, how long did it take to come up with the overall structure of the show, get people like Aaron and Michelle and Hugh together, have Jason aboard as your executive producer? How long did it take to put it all together?
Probably almost 2 years. It took, writing it. Once I figured out how to write it, that happened pretty quickly. I had already been working with Jason for a couple of years, so he was the first person I gave it to. And once he wanted to get on board, we worked on it a little bit together, and then we started trying to figure out how to set it up in the world. Once Hulu came on, they asked me to write a second episode to sort of see, if it would have legs. And then they had a few other notes, so I did that. And then we went and started trying to cast the show. So all in all, it's, a couple years.
In the last few months, we have seen a number of faith projects come to the screen and the television. For example, last night, The Passion on Fox, narrated by Tyler Perry from New Orleans. We've had films come up like Risen, The Young Messiah, Miracles from Heaven, so on and so forth. And I'm wondering if this, because faith-based films, faith-based TV shows have come and go a little bit, but they've really been very big in the last year. And I'm wondering what kind of influence these films or these projects may have had on what you did or what you came up with.
At the time, I think it's so interesting that they're all coming out. There must be just like something in the water. But, at the time, this show was a very difficult sell. People, I think, there's interest in maybe telling the story of Jesus. But faith in itself seems to be, something that people are still really afraid of talking about. But I do think, obviously it is one of the sort of most present subjects in our world right now, and it's really interesting to look at it. And I think what makes this show more palpable is that the religion is made up. We're not using a religion that already exists, and that I think that it was easier for people to digest about it. So no one is going to feel criticized, per se.
Mm. Was that something that was on top of mind? Was like, what do I want to say about how people practice faith, and yet not put them in an embarrassing position, or put where people were like ashamed of faith, or ashamed of prayer, or ashamed and so forth?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, part of what I really love about the show is that we also, you know, try to, you know, write about what, you know, in Myerism, people are actually really trying to live an authentic, meaningful life. They're actually doing good in the world. They're actually trying to, like, have their faith be action, and so we also wanted to write about the draw of faith and why it does make so many people's lives, it fills an emotional hole for so many people, and it gives so many people a structure, and it gives so many people hope. So, you know, we wanted the show to be complicated and talk about, you know, not just put people down for believing in things.
Jennifer Goldberg is with us this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. She is the creator of The Cast. It is Hulu's new dramatic series. The co-stars are the Emmy Award winner from Breaking Bad, Aaron Paul. Also, Hugh Dancy and Michelle Monaghan. It all premieres on March 30th on Hulu.com. And, of course, you can catch the show on smart TV sets and smart TV devices like Roku, Google Chromecast, Apple TV, etc. that carry Hulu. Jessica joins us live this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Apple Banner here with you live from New York on this Monday afternoon through Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or a comment, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have Stevie in the room. We have Guest 900 in the room. So be involved. We like to hear from you because what you say matters. And coming up in our next half hour, you're going to meet somebody who could be a contender for hardest working co-star on television. His name is Chance Kelly, and he is working in, get this, 4 different television series as a co-star. One of them is the new Netflix series, The Characters, that came out early this month. Another is Banshee. Fourth and final season premieres April 1st on Cinemax. And then he's got Power on Stars this summer, going to season number 3. And Aquarius, going to season number 2 later this year on NBC. Jessica, tell us how you were able to get Aaron and you and Michelle all on board with your series.
Oh, my gosh. I have no idea. I just feel so lucky. You know, I had this dream board in my office of, like, you know, with Aaron and Michelle's pictures on it. And Michelle was the first person we sent the script to. And, you know, she found it interesting. She found the character provocative. She came in and I don't know, somehow the she took the leap of faith. And Aaron, same thing. You know, it's hard to go back to television after Breaking Bad, but something in the script, something in the journey of the character spoke to him, and he too said yes. And the third, Hugh Dancy, was the hardest character to cast. When you see the show, he's sort of the leader of the cult, and it's a very, you know, he has to be charismatic, but he's a really complicated character. So we were having a little trouble casting that part, and then Hannibal got canceled. And it was very exciting. So
and
I don't know. I don't know
course,
how. I'm just grateful. I'm grateful.
Yeah, absolutely, Jessica. And for people who, of course, know Aaron from his Emmy-winning performance in Breaking Bad, this is not the same thing. This is not I'm sticking along with Bryan Cranston for the ride, as good that performance was. This is he's front and center, and it's a pretty, and from what I could see, it's a pretty remarkable performance.
Oh, yeah, he's amazing. I mean, he's also, what's so exciting, I think, for him is he's a total man in the show. He's like a father. He and Michelle have a very sort of intense marriage. It's very sexy. And he is going through a deep, painful journey in the show. And he just has, tells the story of that crisis of faith with such like beauty and heart. I'm blown away.
How much research did you do in putting the scripts together, going to churches, going to synagogues, going to unusual places of faith in putting your show together?
That's a great question. We did a ton of research. I mean, I had grown up in Woodstock, which had a lot of unusual, you know, in the 80s, 70s, you know, it had a lot of unusual movements. So I had grown up around people who sort of chose alternative belief systems. But once we got the writers, we really tried to research more thoroughly. And we really culled from everything. I mean, there's a lot of, like, you know, Christianity, there, you know, it, very traditional religions. And then we went much more Eastern. But, yeah, we that was when we really started honing in and doing a lot of the research.
Mm-hmm. How many of the scripts of the series did you put together?
How many did I personally? Well, yeah. there's 10 in the first season. There's 10 episodes. And is that the question?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, there's 10. It's a 10 episode first season.
And did you write all 10, or did you write the first four
I wrote four of them, and then we had a team, amazing team of writers. There's four writers, and then Jason wrote one, Kadams, who is Friday Night Lights and Parenthood. So, yeah, it was a very small room. It's a very intimate show, and it felt like the right way to do it.
Mm-hmm. How did you run the writer's room compared to what you did with Jason on Parenthood? What did you learn from him and that writer's room experience that you adapted or you altered for the people in your writer's room?
You know, I learned a lot from Jason. I mean, what I love about how he works and something I emulate is I have a 9-year-old daughter. Jason, like, has a family. He loves his family. You know, we get in at 10. We eat lunch in the room. We don't really go on the computer. You know, we work till 6 o'clock. We're done. You know, it's very, like, focused and intense and you get through the day. Everybody, doesn't matter what level you are, everybody sort of has a voice, and I want everybody's voice. And those are two of the things that I feel like I really learned working for him. So that was useful.
Stevie Detter is in our chat room. She's got a question for you. First of all, she cannot wait to finally see your show. And her question is, and the third one, absolutely. And her question is, did you start with a dream list of actors? Were there certain actors that you saw, or had a list of, like, I want these people, whether they're going to be stars or they're going to be in one episode as a guest star? Did you have that dream list?
Yeah, like I said, I actually had pictures of them on my wall. I literally, this never happens in life, by the way, like, I actually had a picture of Michelle and a picture of Aaron, and they're both in my show. So I'm, you know, that's pretty awesome. But yes, I had a list, and you know, I would have had Hugh on the wall, but he was in another show at the time.
And we will leave that for another discussion. Stevie, thank you for the chat room question. If you have one, put in the chat room SimonApple04 by name if Stevie did, or give us a ring, 646-652-2906. We've got Jessica Goldberg. She is the creator of The Path. It's Hulu's new drama, and it premieres March 30th all over the place on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Of course, more details online, Hulu.com. And this is Simon Appleberry with you on a Monday afternoon for Tomorrow We Televise, a show all about television. We've had some wonderful guests on this show over the last week. A week ago, we had Mark Bocco. He is the head of programming for Dick Clark Productions, and yes, he was the key executive producer on The Passion that was on last night from 8 to 10 on Fox. If you want to check up on that episode, our episode last Wednesday with Misha Green and Joe Pekoski, the creators and executive producers of Underground, the acclaimed series about the Underground Railroad on WGN America, and the director of that series, and American Crime Story, The People vs. O.J. Simpson, Anthony Hemingway, who was with us exclusively on our show Friday. You can hear all those episodes at our homepage. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And you can also check out the podcast version at iTunes.com. Download to your smartphone or tablet. Take us on the go anytime you like. And speaking of iTunes, there's an iTunes podcast app now available on Apple TV 2.0. And our program, another Blog Talk Radio podcast, are available for you to watch and hear on your television set through Apple TV 2.0, available at your local Apple store or online. Jessica, what are you learning about yourself as a writer and, in a way, you know, really, it's a it's a producing role for you. You are not only writing, you're producing, you're supervising people, you are in effect, you know, creating everything, and this is, as you said, this is your baby.
What do I worry about?
Yeah.
Yeah, I worry about everything. I mean, I don't think I've slept more than like 6 hours since this started. I have thoughts in the middle of the night, and I worry that I won't remember them. They're about character. They're about story. I have, you know, and then the really crazy part of this job, which you don't expect, because writers are naturally kind of like quiet people who sit in rooms by themselves and, you know, don't socialize a lot, is that like suddenly you have to like manage other people and look at budgets. Like, you know, I barely made it through math. So there's so many other aspects of this job suddenly that are beyond like telling stories that keep you up at night. But, you know, the real joy is like sitting in that room with like the writers and just trying to tell the most sort of, you know, intriguing and, you know, emotionally complicated stories we can. And that's the part that makes the most sense. And the other stuff, you know, is stuff that I'm just sort of getting used to.
Mm-hmm. We have another chat room question, and we'll get to it in a moment. First of all, we have to explain something here. What is the movement?
The movement is called Meyerism. It's made up. I made it up. The mythology of it is, you know, told in the show, but basically there's a man who in 1973 had a vision, and he saw a light, and it sort of told of an apocalypse that's coming. In this case, it's a man-made apocalypse based on our own destruction of the environment and the planet. And this religion is about like a series of spiritual exercises in which, you know, the people in it will eventually be saved from this apocalypse and live in this garden together.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a sort of Eastern-y, mostly Eastern, but with some Western ideas religion.
So here's the chat room question. What made you decide to focus on the movement at the point that's trying to change from generation to generation, from first to second?
That's a great question. Well, when I started researching cults, most of them only make it one generation because they center around a charismatic leader. And once that charismatic leader dies, the religion's over. It's all about the person, most religions. The religions that make it to a second generation are the ones that have legs. So that question to me was super interesting. How do you move from first generation to second generation in a religion? And that is what the first season of the show is trying to do.
Mm-hmm. If you go second season, third season, how do you want the story to evolve? And what do you want the show to say as seasons go about our relationship to faith, our relationship to God, however we worship God, whether it is as a Christian, a Jew, a Baptist, a Protestant, a Buddhist, a Hindu? What do you want ultimately this show to say, what people to get the most as a main point?
Well, you know, it's funny. I think more than me trying to say something, I think, you know, what I hope that we're doing is put the question out there about the question you're asking about how do we believe? How do we have compassion for people who don't have our beliefs? I think we're trying to more, rather than say what we want the show to say, is ask the question and get people talking about the question. I mean, extreme faith right now is such an important topic in our world globally, and it's a topic people don't always like to talk about. So I think it's really fun and interesting to be able to explore that here, and hopefully, you know, ask those questions about, you know, once we started doing the research, we were really sort of shocked that you could go online and people are living in such pain for having beliefs that are different than their parents or than their, you know, than their communities, and that is a really global issue.
Mm-hmm. And how do you hope your own faith is? What is the experience done with your own faith, your own ideals of faith?
Oh gosh, you know, I just love faith. I really do. I'm really drawn to it. I can't, and for myself, I've never been able to sign up for anything, you know, altogether, but I'm so like spiritually adjacent and so sort of interested in all the beautiful parts of all the different faiths. I mean, you know, we've taken so many beautiful things that are so moving. And you know, I think it's an opportunity to explore in myself, like why I can't go all in on a faith in particular. But it keeps broadening my understanding of people and their beliefs and why belief is so important.
Well, one thing we can believe in is that the path is going to be happening. It starts March 30th. On Hulu. Check your local listings for Hulu is available in your area on smart TV sets and also on smart TV devices like Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Google Chromecast, etc., etc., etc. For more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.hulu.com. It's www.hulu.com. The Path starts March 30th. Jessica Goldberg, the creator of The Path, thank you again for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank
Congratulations
you.
On getting your first question on the air. You're very, very
thank
welcome.
Thank you. All right, have a good
and
one.
And all the very best. You too, and all the best for a wonderful run.
All right, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You are welcome, Jessica. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Jessica Goldberg, the creator of The Path, joining us live from Los Angeles. Well, our classic trivia question of the week, and our second guest coming up in the next half hour after we pause for some words from Audible.com. Now, if you're a Downton Abbey fan, and you're having pangs of guilt like, oh, my God, Downton Abbey's gone forever, can't go to my local PBS station. Well, guess what? We have a solution, and that solution is The World of Downton Abbey, narrated by the wonderful Academy Award-nominated actress Elizabeth McGovern. And you can get that when that becomes your free audiobook, part of a one-month trial, to Audible.com. You know, Audible is a leading provider of spoken digital entertainment and information and, of course, inspiration too, with over 180,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now through Blog Talk Radio. Plus, if you sign up at this URL, audibletrial.com/televised, that's audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook and that one-month trial. Because Audible is an Amazon.com company, you know the customer service is going to be absolutely exquisite 24/7. And if you're not a fan of Downton Abbey, but you like things like, oh, Charlie Rose and his nightly interviews on PBS and Bloomberg Television, you can get that on Audible.com. Or you can get the new Emma Thompson audiobook of her doing the classic Henry James ghost story, The Turn of the Screw. And there's a lot of Doctor Who, a lot of other things, too, available for you among the 180,000 titles of Audible.com. So if you want to get that free audiobook and that free trial, head on over to this URL, audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. Audible.com, your home for great audio entertainment. And now it's time for our regular feature, the classic trivia question. We're going to do that, by the way. One of our chat room people said, thanks for having Jessica on and have a wonderful day. That's from Stevie, who has been with us in the chat room most of this past half hour. So, Stevie, thank you for that. Thank you for your questions also. Do appreciate it. Now it's time to get you involved with our classic trivia question of the week. And if you are first with the correct answer before Good Friday, we'll give you a wonderful prize. It's Nobody Dies in Hollywood, the wonderful first novel by acclaimed TV writer-producer John Wilder. His credits include Spencer for Hire, The Streets of San Francisco, and Centennial. And here's our question. We haven't done this in a while. We're going to have you complete a song lyric. The song is the theme from the popular comedy Good Times. So complete this song phrase from Good Times. Easy, blank. Easy, E-S-E-A-S-Y, blank. Easy, blank. If you're first with that answer, you will win Nobody Dies in Hollywood. How do you get involved? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please enclose your name and where you're from. That means your mailing address. And if you're first with the answer, you win. You can also use Twitter, which, by the way, today marks its 10th anniversary in biz, and use this hashtag, TWBT. That's Twitter, hashtag TWBT. That Twitter option is made available by the wonderful people at Hopscotch. The folks invite all of you to create your own social soundtrack, and you can learn how from Marty Monaco and the folks there at www.hopscotch.com. www.hopscotch.com. Either way, email or Twitter, you're first. You win. So get busy, and all the best to you. And if you missed the question just now, no worries. I'll post it tomorrow morning on my Facebook page, Simon Applebaum, and my own Twitter hashtag at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. So all the very best to all of you participating. This is Tomorrow We Televise. We are the Pro Bowl Back Television. And when we come back, meet one of the hardest people on camera. His name is Chance Kelly. He does four series. You'll find out which ones and how he does them after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, the best internet radio on the planet. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for one wild program, the Key and D Unplugged Show. Check out Key and D and crew tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, that the VTR is available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com. And you can also check out the wonderful iTunes podcast app. All Blog Talk Radio podcasts, including our own, are available for you to watch and hear through Apple TV 2.0's iTunes podcast app. Welcome back to Tomorrow We Televise. This Monday afternoon in March 2016. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Good to have you aboard. Another great guest coming up. So if you have a question or comment, ring it in, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 048. We welcome guests 883, 913, and 924 into the room. Because of the way TV now works, where you can sometimes have more than one series in production at the same time, it's very easy for someone to maybe star or co-star in two series for 1 year. But my next guest goes even better. He is involved in not one, not two, not three, but four television series that will happen this year. He currently is one of the co-stars of The Characters, a new series on Netflix that started about 2 weeks ago. On April 1st, he hooks up with the fourth and final season of Banshee on Cinemax. And coming up later this year, he resumes his co-star roles in the popular series Power this summer on Starz and Aquarius on NBC. Joining us live from Los Angeles, Chance Kelly. Chance.
Hey, Simon. How are you?
Very fine, thank you. How did you get yourself in a position where you're doing four co-starring roles at pretty much the same time?
Well, I don't know. I love to work. I have three kids. I have a wife. They like nice things. You know, it's got to keep it going. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Keeps the beers away, keeps things going, good top of mind, and so forth. Let's start with the show that's currently on now. That's The Characters, brand new thing from Netflix. What do you do on that show?
I play a police detective, which was a bit of a stretch. Kidding. Paul Downs was a lot of fun to work with. He's a funny guy. And we were investigating a murder case that went down. And I love doing any kind of comedy because I don't always get the opportunity to do that. So that was a lot of fun.
It looks like it's a lot on the ensemble side. It's like everybody gets their chance to shine.
What, on The Characters?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's from what I understand, I mean, I haven't seen the show yet, but they profile one comedian, I think, who writes and produces the episode and puts their stamp, you know, their imprint on it. And yeah, I mean, it's a cool concept. Netflix is doing a lot of cool stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. How did you get the role on the series? Where did you have to go to make it happen?
We shot that in New York. Where were we? Over in that that area between like Greenpoint and Queens. You know that you never quite know exactly where you are if you're in Brooklyn or Queens, but you know you're working and you're shooting something, and it has that very gritty vibe over there. I think it was Greenpoint actually. Where we were.
That's where Boardwalk Empire was shot with all the green screen.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, man, we shoot so much stuff over in that neighborhood, that between Greenpoint and then over and up into Queens a little bit. Just seems like half the stuff in New York is shot in that neighborhood. I mean, I've shot there a lot.
True. And Powell, we'll talk about that later. That was also shot in Brooklyn. And going into its third year on Starz. But talk first about Banshee, because it's reaching a very pivotal point on April 1st. It's going into its fourth and final season. It's a show that when people see it, they like it. Some would say love it. Greg Utanas, one of the key people behind it, the director of many of his episodes, was on our show several years ago. I know he's working on a new series now, but he's also still involved with Banshee. How long have you been connected with that series?
Just this season. I'm only in this final season. I didn't know the show when I got cast. I had to watch it a little bit. Frankly, I'm not a guy who digs violence on screen, so it was a little rich for my taste.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of grinned my way through a couple seasons of it so I could understand it. And then when I went to set, I kind of was dreading it. In your brain, you're thinking that the people are like the material. You know, you're thinking the subject matter, they might be like that. And I get there, it was the nicest group of people. I mean, it usually is the case, you know. They were the nicest group of people in real life. And it was just this weird, this weird sensation that you get in this business a lot. Like, man, these people are really nice. You got it. That show seems mm-hmm. awful on screen. I mean, not awful. It's a very good show, but the content is very, very heavy duty, you know.
Not surprising, because the creator is Alan Ball of Six Feet Under fame, and knowing him, you know that him and True Blood also, that he's always going to throw some monkey wrenches, some big surprise. In this case, the big surprise that came at the beginning of the run is that the sheriff is a bad guy who assumes this person's identity. He's his first on the run.
I thought the pilot was so interesting, so well written, so well crafted. Just the way that guy rolls into the town, and the way the circumstances play out exactly, so that he's able to finagle this new position as the sheriff. But it's funny because it bridges the good guy and the bad guy a lot, which is a lot about what I do. Is I play cops a lot and military guys a lot, and I play criminals. I tell people I play coaches, criminals, cops, and colonels. But I like to do more than that. But there's a fine line between the good guy and the bad guy, and that makes compelling stories.
Mm-hmm. Banshee, what role do you play for the final season?
What's that?
What role do you play on Banshee for the final year?
Well, I don't play a good guy. Let me just say that.
Okay.
I mean, he may think he's a good guy, in his own warped sense of things. And, you got to play it like that. But I would go so far as to say this might be the nastiest, evilest character I've ever played, with maybe the exception of who I played in Unbreakable years and years ago. But this guy is very, very nasty. And
How do you rev yourself up to play that level of nasty?
I think every human has good and bad in them. And I don't mean that they have to be bad. I think that as a human, you have a huge range of sentiments and vibes and emotions. And even if you've seen evil, if you're an effective actor, I think you're able to channel certain things that certainly are not part of your makeup. But, there is something, don't take this the wrong way, there's something liberating about being a bad guy for a period of time until they say cut, and then you walk away from it, and it's like, it's almost like you've released it out of your soul, and there's evil in this world, and I'm not, I'm a big boy, I'll face up to it, and I try to look things in the eye a little bit, and this scumbag that I play, he doesn't think he's evil, he thinks he's doing the right thing, that's how you got to do it, and you have fun, you embrace it, and then you let it go. I mean, you'll take it home.
Hey, look, evil characters are some of the most multidimensional characters in TV history. A great example of that, Bryan Cranston of Breaking Bad. You can't get better than somebody who starts out as this meek, professor who comes up with math, and he ends up being like a master of crime who gets his in the end. But the way that evolved, thanks to Cranston's acting and everyone else around him, was a thing of beauty.
Yeah, it was great writing, too. I mean, not to take anything away from him. He's fantastic. But the writing and the character arcs were just amazing, in that show. And the pace, that's something else. The pace of that show was so perfect, how it started out slow and then it ramps up. And then, That's television that you can't stop watching, especially in this binge watch world that we're in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's what really drew me and my wife in, you know.
Yeah. Especially when TV is becoming more and more distinctive, where no matter what roles you take, the show, because of the way it's produced, the way it is filmed, or done on videotape, the writing, the creativity that you see, the ability to take chances. You look at a show, I say this all the time, look at a show like Underground or American Crime or American Crime Story, and you see a specific view or a specific viewpoint that the characters all play in.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's what makes good storytelling, you know?
For sure. By the way, I want to welcome guests 9:15 and 9:35 into our chat room. Simon Apple 04, my name. You're hearing Tamabi Televised, the show about television. And we've got a very, very busy person. He's got 4 television series that you can find him on over the course of now or the next few months. His name is Chance Kelly. You can currently see him on the Netflix series, The Characters. And that, of course, is available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices all over the place. Then on April 1st, he's part of the 4th and final season of Banshee, the popular series on Cinemax created by Alan Ball of 16 Under and True Blood fame. And then coming up, and we'll talk about this in a bit, the new season, number 3 of Power, which is shot, I'm happy to say, here in New York, near my neck of the woods in Brooklyn. And he's also involved with Aquarius, which premiered last year with David Akanji starring on NBC. We'll be coming back for a second season later this year. If you have a question or comment for Chance, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. By the way, in addition to doing this program, I also do columns under the Tamabi Televised banner for MediaVillage.com. It's a wonderful site of Media Village, of media, I should say, information, analysis, and commentary headed by our very good friend, Jack Myers. Check out MediaVillage.com. I think you'll enjoy it. That's MediaVillage.com. So, Chance, talk about Power. Have you been on the show from the get-go, or like what you did with Banshee, this is your first time around with season 3?
No, Power, I was on all 3 seasons. Not all that many episodes, but I came in season 1. I did 1 or 2 in season 1, and then I did 1 or 2 in season 2, and then I ended up doing 3 this year. It was supposed to be 2, but it ended up they split it into 3, so it went the whole 3 seasons.
And what role do you play there?
I play a U.S. attorney, prosecutor that Angela works for, and sort of calls the shots with those guys and the cases and the ghost and when they're chasing this guy down. I'm sort of the head strategist for how we approach these cases. And there's a lot of twists and turns on that show. Who's doing the bad stuff, you know, and who's chasing the bad guys and who are the bad guys. It's kind of interesting what's going on there.
Yeah. Courtney Cavada, who is the wonderful Emmy-nominated writer from The Good Wife, is the head of that series, and we've had her on the show. I've met her also in person, wonderful person. What's it been like to work with that set? What kind of, by the way, when you go from set to set, or from environment to environment, really, with these shows, what kind of vibe do you look for? What kind of vibe excites your acting, or excites the roles you play?
Well, first off, I mean, I like good material, you know, not to be snobby about it, but, you know, I like for the storylines and the show to have some kind of depth to it, and I think all these shows do. So first you want to know that it's not crap, you know, and you want to know that this thing has a real method to it, that there's a direction for this series, and that from one season to the next and from one script to the next, they're going places. I like to know that the acting is effective, and I think they have very good actors on that show. I mean, Christ, they got Vincent Garber on that show. I don't know if he's still on it, but he was on 1 or 2 seasons. And everybody I worked with was great. And then I look for professionalism. You know, I like to see that shows are professional, and you know, that goes for the people in front of the camera and behind the camera. I just think it's good business, and they are very much on Power as well. You know, very, very professional, very welcoming. You know, as a guest, you show up. A lot of times there's a territoriality thing going on, just like in the schoolyard, you know. You show up and you're not a regular, and people look at you. Sometimes they puff out their chest. Sometimes they're standoffish. I don't get that power at all. I show up every year or so, and they're really nice people, all of them. I think, you know, I never worked with Joe Sikora on the show, but he's always been a big – I've always been a big fan of his, man. He's a special actor. There's something about that guy I really dig. And they're all good. I mean, Omari and Leela and Naturi and Andy Bean and Shane and, you know, everybody. They're all really good. David Fumero's a good dude.
Before we get to Aquarius, what do you like better? Do you like the one-shot guest role, or do you like where you can be in a co-starring role for several episodes at a time on a particular series?
I'm sorry. Restate that question.
Yeah, sure. What do you like better? Do you like the one-shot guest role where you have a chance to, like, really have one episode to flesh your character out, or do you like the kind of recurring character that pops up every few episodes
no.
in a series?
No,
go ahead.
All these other shows are great, and it's nice to visit them, but Aquarius is my home, and that's my show, and this group on Aquarius is just phenomenal, and the writers, the producers, and the cast it's unlike anything I've ever worked on, because it's a real team effort. Duchovny is an awesome star to have for a lot of different reasons, but first and foremost, because he doesn't act like a big shot star. He acts like one of us. He acts like one of the team who's getting it done, and he's totally supportive. And the cast of writers and producers are so awesome. There's no ivory tower on this show. They're always down on the floor with us, and they allow us input, and it's a somewhat of a democratic environment, and within reason, you know, it's not anarchy, but it's an open environment. It's an open forum in certain ways. And I'd love to answer your question. I love being on Aquarius. It's unlike anything I've ever done.
Mm-hmm. Aquarius, of course, opened last year on NBC to rave reviews, and it got the you might say skin of his teeth, the renewal for season two. Do you know when NBC is going to bring the show back, and then what can we expect in season two?
You know, my understanding, Simon, is that we don't officially have an air date yet. I think this year gets a little complicated because there's Olympics this year, I think. Last year we aired at the end of May. They've talked about anywhere from that period this year through, like, the fall. So I don't know, but it is my opinion that the online views were very strong for us in season one, and I do hope that that is an option this year that viewers can binge watch this season, because I think it's very effective, and that's how people are watching TV today.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any role models in the arena of co-star? I'll give you an idea of, for example, one that I consider a role model. Way back when, there was a series called Harry O, with David Jansen playing a private investigator in California. And in the second season, there was a shift in his sidekick, or sort of the police sidekick. Henry Darrow, who had played that role, was bumped off, and he was replaced by Anthony Zerbe. And he played Lieutenant Trench. He sort of became like Harry O's foil. He was like bravura. In the role, and he ended up winning an Emmy Award in the final season, ran 3 years on ABC. And I like Zerbe because it seems like he's one of those people that no matter where you see him, he always delivers a terrific performance. It's as fleshed out as he can make it. He seems to enjoy his work. There's a naturalness, a natural spirit in what he does, even if he plays someone that you would not like to have drinks at the bar with.
I've been so lucky to work in so many different things. I'm continuously blown away by many of the people I work with. Duchovny is definitely one of them, because he's such a polished pro, and I mean that in a good way. Not that his stuff looks overtly polished, but he is so solid on set, and that it's like it trickles down throughout the production. Almost everybody I've worked with on the show is that way. Now, that being said, every show I go to, I'm you know, I'm fortunate to work with a lot of these people. The fella on a bunch of good people on Banshee, but there was a fella, Ulrich from, what is he? I don't want to get this wrong. I believe he's a Swedish actor. But he plays, you know, he plays the super, super bad guy. On Banshee, he plays Kai. Man, he's something else, that dude. He's got some real, I don't know, je ne sais quoi, or whatever you want to call it. He's an interesting cat. So that was fun. I ran into a handful of people on that show that I already knew. Matt Servito, Matthew Rausch, you know those guys from New York a little bit. You know, way back when I worked on Fringe back in the day, like back in 2009 so, the fella on that show was very, very fun, very interesting to work with. John
Noble, who was very nominated. I like him. He's a wonderful actor. And he really drove Fringe to me.
And it wasn't the only one. Anna Torv was a lot of fun to work with. Really nice gal. They're both Aussies, I believe. Lance Reddick was on that show. I really like that dude. And, you know, my buddy Kirk Acevedo was on that. Josh Jackson. You know, some good talent on that show. That show was fun. You know, nothing lasts forever, but I enjoyed working on that show. I worked on Mercy a couple of years ago, that series called Mercy, and I ran into James LeGros. Man, I've been a fan of that dude forever. He is hilarious. You know James LeGros?
Yes, LeGros. I do. I've seen his work in different places, yeah.
I love that dude. Ever since that movie, what the heck was that movie about the indie film years ago? He was so funny in that. And it's fun getting to meet people. And look, man, I got to meet Clint Eastwood 2 years ago, year and a half ago. That was like, I was like a little girl meeting that guy. It was like a religious experience meeting, not just meeting, but sitting there and working with and watching Clint go to work was just an incredible experience for me. Really, really uplifting and eye-opening in a lot of ways. So, I mean, look, that's the beauty of this business. You keep meeting really interesting people, I think, you know, in front of and behind the camera, you know. I just love it. I love being in this business. You know, I'm very fortunate.
We got a few more minutes with Chance Kelly. He is one very busy actor and co-star. He currently can be seen on the new Netflix series, The Characters, which started about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, and that's available on smart TV sets, smart TV devices like Roku, Apple TV 2.0, Google Chromecast, Amazon Fire TV, Shield, etc., etc. And he also will be seen starting April 1st on the fourth and final season of Banshee on Cinemax. It's a Friday night series, and it's going into its fourth and final season. Chance joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Smart Beach Televised. I'm Apple Bound from the other coast of New York. You have a question or comment, ring it in, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04. My name is welcome guest 944 into the room. At some point, Chance, do you want to perhaps do your own series, write, create, produce your own program?
It's funny, man, because I was, you know, searching your last guest, Jessica, while you were interviewing her. We've lived sort of parallel lives, she and I. I was an NYU student, and we've worked with some of the same people. And I was actually a writer even before I was an actor. My area of focus at NYU was English and writing, creative writing and English. And I've been writing for years. And it's just taken me a long time to sort of master the screenplay and teleplay format, but I'm in the process of working on three things right now that are written by me. One is Inside Fighter, which is a feature film that we've been trying to put together a full production plan and financing for. Then I wrote, and I always write. I always make sure to write a plum role for Chance Kelly in anything that I. Right, because it takes a lot of time and there's a lot of heart that goes into it. And I think that these are roles that I'm not really getting right now. They're written a certain way. You know, he's not necessarily a cop criminal, colonel, or the other series, I forget. But I write things that I'm not really doing right now, that things that are off the board a little bit. So I've got two features and a TV pilot that I'm working on. Yeah, so yes, I want to write and produce. I don't particularly want to direct. I don't really think I'm a good candidate for that right now.
Yeah, what's the TV pilot? What kind of pilot is it?
It's called The Balance, and it's about. It's funny. It's sort of in the genre of what Jessica's show is about. It's about existentialism, sort of. It's about faith, and it's about afterlife. And there's a lot more than that that goes into it, but it's essentially about love and family. So I've been working on it for many years, and it was a sort of higher concept. It took me a while to be able to, you know, write in script form to be able to put this on paper. So I'm sort of that's working on that now, but I've got two feature scripts that are done, and we'll see what we can do, man. You know, you just got to keep cracking away at it in this business.
And now you have things like Kickstarter and Indiegogo and equity crowdfunding where you can have a good shot at raising the money.
Yeah, that's a tricky game. You got to be careful with that stuff. I think the right way is to get with the people who are in the position to get these things greenlit and do them. Sure, social media is, you know, I mean, the crowdfunding is definitely a way to go, but I think there's a critical mass of, you know, what size budget you're going to raise on that. Now, there's exceptions. There's always exceptions, like the one that that fella did a couple of years ago. We raised like $2 million. The girl from, there were two films that raised an astounding amount of money on crowdfunding, but those are the only two that I've seen because they had big names attached to them. But yeah, so crowdfunding is one option to go with for a certain budget level. You know, let's say a couple hundred thousand and down. Sure.
Right now, you can see Chance Kelly in The Characters. It's Netflix's brand new series, and it started about 2 weeks ago. If you have a smart TV set, if you have a smart TV device like Roku, Google Chromecast, etc., you can see The Characters right now on Netflix. And coming up on April 1st, the fourth and final season of Banshee. That's Friday night at 10 o'clock on Cinemax. Check your local listings for Cinemax is available in the area on cable and satellite. For more details about The Characters, go to Netflix.com. More about Banshee online at www.cinemax.com. And coming later this year, you can see Chance in the third season of Power. That is on Starz, which is produced here in New York. And the second season of Aquarius coming back to NBC at a date to be named. Chance Kelly, thank you again for a wonderful interview. It's been a pleasure to have you on. All the very best with all your projects, and I hope that The Balance becomes a TV series, and if it does, or before, you are always welcome back. It's a pleasure.
Thanks a lot, Simon. It's a pleasure here. Thanks for having me.
A pleasure. You got it, Chance. All the greatest. Take care. Have a wonderful week.
Be good. You too. Thank you.
Will do. Bye-bye. Chance Kelly joining us live from Los Angeles. Last Friday, we led off with an exclusive interview with perhaps the hottest episodic TV director right now, Anthony Hemingway. He has done half of the episodes of American Crime Story, The People vs. O.J. Simpson, tomorrow night at 10 o'clock on FX. He is also one of the key directors and executive producers of Underground, the critically acclaimed Underground Railroad drama, Wednesday night at the same hour on WGN America. And it was a pleasure to have him on. And after the interview, I thought, you know, many directors basically specialize. You either do live shows or tape shows. You either do news shows or sports shows. You either do comedies or dramas. You either do genre shows, science fiction, or genre shows, horror, or genre shows, romance, or adventure, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We don't really have a lot of directors that do it all. And that's why I want to call to your attention someone who passed away a week ago Saturday that did, in his wonderful career, do it all. His name is James Sheldon. And he may be the most prolific versatile television director that this medium ever had. Check this out. In a career that spanned more than three decades, from 1952 to 1986, he worked on, one way or the other as a director, on more than 100 television series. I'm not kidding. 100 television series. And in 1 year alone, according to his obit in the New York Times last Friday, that in 1967, he directed, among other things, episodes of Ironside, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., Petticoat Junction, My Three Sons, That Girl, The Fugitive, and Walt Disney's Wonderful World of Color. How's that for versatility? And he not only was versatile in terms of what shows he did, but where he did them. He did shows in New York. He did shows in Los Angeles. And when he was a regular director on the classic Route 66 in the early 1960s, he did them on the road as part of television's first drama shot on location all over this U.S. of A. Sheldon got his start in 1952 with an unassuming sitcom called Mr. Peepers. It came out of Los Angeles. It starred Molly Cox as a shy teacher getting his newest job in a new high school. It was the role that got Cox famous. And in the second season, the show went network on NBC. And it was at that time that Cox received a foil for his role, that foil being a young Tony Randall. It was James Shelton that gave Tony Randall that role. And the result was absolute magic. At the time, Sheldon not only did a show like Mr. Peepers, he did anthology shows like Celebrity Playhouse, Armstrong Circle Theater, and the popular Dick Powell, Zane Grey Theater. And he kept doing anthology shows as long as they were around. His most famous work was on The Twilight Zone. And if you want to see an example of Sheldon's work at its very best, check out an episode from season 3 called It's a Good Life. It's one of the classics. And it's all about an 8-year-old named Anthony who lives in a farm town called Peeksville, Ohio. And on the surface, Anthony has a wonderful family. He's got a wonderful life. All is good. Except for one thing. Anthony is not who he appears to be. Anthony is someone who one day decided, I'm going to separate Peeksville, Ohio from the rest of the civilized world. And oh, by the way, if I hear anybody that has bad thoughts about me or anything I like, there they go, out of the civilized world, into the cornfield, and into, frankly, zapped into obscurity. The show is one of the best of The Twilight Zone, written by Rod Serling from a brilliant short story by Jerome Bixby, and Sheldon directed it. And I want to call your attention to, I think, the best part of the show and the best part of Sheldon's work. It's a classic. It's a performance by an actor named Don Kiefer. We just talked to Chance Kelly, who was a co-star, supporting actor on a number of shows. Well, Don Kiefer was a co-star or supporting actor on a bunch of shows at the time. But his performance in this was the best. He plays a man named Dan Hollis, who was a visitor to Anthony's home. And every Sunday night, the visitors come to Anthony and his family, Anthony played by Billy Mummy, and his father played by the wonderful character actor John Larch, to watch television that Anthony programs. It turns out to be Dan's birthday, and he gets from his wife a Perry Como record. But he can't play it because Anthony wouldn't like it. He doesn't like that kind of music, and he doesn't want to be wished into the cornfield, if you will. But then Dan gets drunk. And in a scene that is first poignant and powerful and then becomes terrifying and horrifying and on the edge of your seat, he decides to take Anthony on. It is a scene you have to see. It's a performance that Don Kiefer just goes all out on. And you believe him every step of the way. And you do because that's how James Sheldon directed it. It's not a scene with frills. It's not a scene with big camera tricks. It is a scene where he just comes face-to-face with the demon in front of him, namely 8-year-old Anthony. And it is something to watch. You are on the edge of your seat, and you are rooting for him every step of the way. And that's what James Sheldon did. He was able to get wonderful performances no matter what kind of show he was working on. And like I said, he was not a flashy camera person. He was not someone who like believed in all sorts of bravura camera tricks or special effects. He loved the performance, he loved the storyline, and no matter what kind of show he's working on, comedy or drama, live or tape, film or whatever, he made it all work. Sheldon passed away last Saturday, a week ago Saturday, in Manhattan. Like I said, he worked between New York and Los Angeles most of his life, and sometimes in between, like on Route 66. He was 95 years old. He died from cancer, according to his son, Tony, who he leaves behind. I hope that if you watch YouTube, or if you see the Twilight Zone Marathon, the next one coming up probably around July 4th, check out It's a Good Life. And check out some of the other wonderful things that James Sheldon did. You can, by the way, see those Mr. Peeper episodes, those early ones, which he did with the wonderful writing of David Swift, Jim Purcell, and Everett Greenbaum on YouTube. And like I said, from the get-go, James was someone that really believed the performance and the story and the point is what matters. So in this age of specialized directing, where everybody does a specific thing, not a versatile thing, not a prolific thing, James Sheldon really stands out as a one-of-a-kind. Frankly, we may never see his like again, which is all the more reason why we should appreciate what he did and when he did it. He was someone that always went for the show, because for him, the show was all that mattered. We will be back on Good Friday with our next edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. We don't have a guest yet lined up for you, so keep us posted. We'll keep you posted on our Facebook page and on my Twitter hashtag at UBCSimon, TWBT. Of course, we're on Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. If you came in on today's episode late, once again, I want to thank our guest, the past creator Jessica Goldberg, and co-star on such shows as The Characters and Banshee, Chance Kelly. Really appreciate them having them aboard. If you came in late on the program, or if you're new to the show and you want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage anytime. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And remember, you can also check out our podcast anytime at iTunes.com. Download your smartphone or tablet. Take us on the go anytime you like. Don't forget, we're on the iTunes podcast app on Apple TV 2.0. We love hearing from you. Again, thank you to our wonderful chat room people for making a big contribution to today's program, especially with our first guest. And we'd like to hear from you. What do you think about our guest today? And what are your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going? I'm all here, so email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. When you email, please include your name and where you're from. You can also find me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter as well. And remember, when you email or use Twitter, that's how you get involved in our wonderful Classic Trivia Question of the Week. Also, we have a segment called The Show to Know. If there's a TV show that you think doesn't deserve enough, that deserves more attention it's getting, please let me know. If we use your suggestion on the air, you, of course, will get the credit. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. We love hearing from you because guess what? What you say matters. So be involved. We like it more that way. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associates, Amy Domestico and Candace Williams. Andy Till is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. The creator and chief executive of this very enterprise is Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow Be Televised was brought to you today by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment, information, and inspiration, and Amazon.com company. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Holy Week, whether it's celebrating Holy Thursday, Good Friday, et cetera, et cetera. We will be back on Good Friday right here, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Remember, whatever you're doing this week, please be safe and be great. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.